Thank you for standing by. This is the Chorus Call conference operator. Welcome to the AGT Food and Ingredients Inc. second quarter 2015 financial results conference call. As a reminder, all participants are in listen-only mode and the conference is being recorded. After the presentation, there will be an opportunity to ask questions. To join the question queue, simply press star and one on your touch-tone telephone. Should anyone need assistance during the conference call, they may signal an operator by pressing star and zero on their telephone. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Omar Al-Khatib, Director of Corporate Affairs and Investor Relations. Please go ahead, Mr. Al-Khatib.
Thank you and good morning. I'd like to thank you all for joining us on our second quarter 2015 conference call. On the line with us today, we have Murad Al-Khatib, President and CEO of AGT Food and Ingredients, Lori Ireland, our Chief Financial Officer, and Gaetan Barasa, our Chief Operating Officer. Before we get started, I'd like to remind everyone that today's call may include forward-looking statements. Such forward-looking statements are given as of the date of this call and involve certain risks and uncertainties. A number of factors and assumptions were applied in the formulation of such statements, and actual results could differ materially. This call may also include references to certain non-IFRS financial measures. For additional information with respect to forward-looking statements, factors and assumptions, as well as reconciliation to IFRS measures, we direct you to our news release, our website, as well as our recent filings on SEDAR. With that, I'd like to turn things over to Murad for some comments, and then we'll go to questions.
Thank you, Omar. Welcome to everyone on our call today. For AGT, this second quarter has been a positive one with continued consistent performance in our business, leveraging the strong foundation we've built for our company that is strengthened by our various diversification, operational, product, and efficiency initiatives over the past periods. Our main segments, pulses and grain processing, and the food ingredient and packaged food segments are performing as per our expectations and in line with our strategic initiatives surrounding growth and expansion of AGT's business. We see many opportunities ahead as our business continues to grow. I'd like to ask our CFO, Lori Ireland, to provide us some highlights for the quarter. Lori?
Thanks, Murad. Hello, AGT reported adjusted EBITDA of $22.2 million for the quarter ended June 30th, 2015. Trailing 12-month adjusted EBITDA was $90.3 million, an increase of 22% when comparing to $74.1 million for the trailing 12 months ended June 30th, 2014. Sales volumes were down over 97,000 tons overall in the quarter at 326,923 tons compared to 424,485 tons in the quarter ended March 31st, 2015. This was due largely to depleted stocks in North America as well as in Australia. However, gross profit, adjusted gross profit, and adjusted EBITDA per ton all increased in the quarter ended June 30, 2015, when compared to the prior quarter and compared to the same quarter in the prior year. Gross profit was $107.85 per ton, adjusted gross profit $119.20 per ton, and adjusted EBITDA was $67.92 per ton. While tons invoiced overall were down when compared to the prior quarter and to the same quarter in the prior year, tons invoiced in the food ingredients and packaged food segment increased. Also important to note is that while the tons invoiced in the segment represent 21.5% of total tons this quarter, adjusted gross profit represented 34% of the total and adjusted EBITDA represented 38.5% of the total adjusted EBITDA this quarter. Net debt improved by $3.4 million compared to the prior quarter, even when considering the $26.8 million acquisition of the assets of WCRR that was closed during the quarter. Non-cash foreign exchange includes a snapshot of outstanding foreign-denominated accounts receivable and accounts payable, as well as outstanding foreign exchange contracts, and includes the contract related to the high-yield bonds. Note that this is a non-cash item and will fluctuate depending on the strength or weakness of foreign currencies when compared to the Canadian dollar. This amounted to an expense of $4.8 million for the 3 months ended June 30, 2015, and this has been excluded from adjusted EBITDA and adjusted earnings per share calculations. AGT has treasury processes in place to ensure that the need to purchase foreign currencies to settle debt will be minimized if it will result in cash losses on foreign exchange. General and administrative and marketing, sales and distribution expenses for the 3 months ended June 30, 2015 increased over the prior quarter and increased over the 3 months ended March 31, 2015. This is due largely to the increase in share price, which impacted the share-based compensation accrual in the current period. The change in finance expenses for the 3 months ended June 30th, 2015, when compared to the 3 months ended June 2014 and to the 3 months ended March 31st, 2015, is due to costs associated with the cross-currency swap on the high-yield bond and are recorded in both unrealized foreign exchange and in finance expense throughout the life of the contract. Though these costs affect unrealized foreign exchange and finance expense, these are non-cash adjustments and have no impact on adjusted EBITDA. In addition, AGT utilizes various trade finance instruments, and the costs associated with these instruments are recorded in finance expense. On a normalized basis, finance expense is in the range of $6.5 to $7.5 million per quarter when considering interest on bank indebtedness, long-term debt, bond interest, and various trade finance instruments. AGT tracks adjusted earnings per share as it's reported exclusive of the non-cash foreign exchange effects of our global business, whether that means a gain or a loss, because management feels that inclusion of both gains and losses that result from snapshot non-cash IFRS effects do not accurately reflect the cash flow generating ability of our business. Adjusted earnings per share improved to 45 cents and 44 cents fully diluted for the 3 months ended June 30th, 2015, compared to 44 cents and 43 cents fully diluted for the same period last year, and compared to 43 cents and 42 cents for the 3 months ended March 31st, 2015. Thank you. Murat?
As you can see, our legacy business is performing well, even in a period where low stocks remained from the 2014 harvest period in North America. Buyers in AGT's key consumption and sales markets were willing to buy at these higher price levels to secure the small amounts of inventory that were remaining in advance of what we believe will be a significant volume of production coming on stream with the North American harvest currently underway. The widespread media reports locally and nationally in Canada about drought conditions in Western Canada throughout the season are expected to result in decreased yields of pulses somewhat. There was lower than average moisture, yes. However, these conditions had more impact on yield than on whether there will be production or not. As reports are showing, we expect there to be significant production levels coming on stream, with yields ranging to the average to slightly above average in pulse crops. Farmers are out in the field, and harvest for lentils and peas particularly is underway. From the early samples we're seeing from early harvest delivery, quality is good, yields are average, and more than adequate volumes for AGT sales and processing operations are expected by management. India and that region, and Turkey and the Middle East North Africa region, have imported significant volumes of Canadian pulses for domestic supply and regional distribution, a trend we believe will continue, and these levels of production are needed to continue to supply these markets. Raw material supplies to Turkey and to our customers in India for lentils and for durum wheat for pasta and other milled wheat products are an important part of our business, and we expect our transportation and bulk loading investments with West Central Road and Rail to provide loading and export opportunities for AGT. We expect this to continue with the integration of these assets into our shipping systems. These investments are focused to allow AGT's production facilities to maximize ship tons and margins in peak shipping periods and execute the strategy of returning value-added capacity to AGT's bagged and containerized business, therefore utilizing the most efficient transportation options available to move AGT products to markets. This is an important element of our strategy going forward. As our sales programs grow, and with production at these levels in Canada and the United States, multiple modes of efficient transportation are needed to move product through our system. Transportation and logistics are important parts of our business, and as a management team, we're constantly evaluating our transportation options and refining our strategy in this area. Efficiency in transportation logistics can have a real positive impact on margins and therefore earnings. We see these all as positive trends for the subsequent quarters in 2015 and 2016 periods leading up to the 2016 North American harvest. Our food ingredient and packaged food segment is also performing well, with increased volumes shipped in the Q2 period and positive trends developing with regards to sales and the benefits of operating leverage as we move through and increase utilization of the assets built in this segment. Test quantities in the food sector are converting to sales volumes, as food company customers continue to adopt them as a part of new and reformulated products that include pulse ingredients as their own application research projects yield results. These application research projects in many cases are being done as collaborative ones with AGT and demonstrating the flexibility and profile of the non-GMO, gluten-free, high-protein, high-fiber, natural, and nutritious food products that pulses can contribute to creating and the nutritional profile that pulses have naturally. The upcoming 2016 United Nations International Year of Pulses Declaration is an interesting initiative that AGT is involved in to promote pulses and this positive profile to the world. We feel, and our food company customers appear to feel the same way, given their interest in this initiative, that this initiative has a positive potential to increase the perception by consumers that pulses are good for you, and it's a message that food companies and retailers are responding to. Enhancement and expansions at Minot, North Dakota production facility are ongoing, with the third production line ramping up, and the announced process for the deflavoring and sterilization processes are on track, with construction tracking to an end-of-the-year completion and commissioning of that deflavoring line in the first quarter of 2016. We expect these enhancements and expansions to assist in further building this business unit as we assist and support our customers in their pulse ingredient product requirements and selections. We expect these developments to positively advance the sales and distribution agreements we have in place with our distribution partners for both human food, pet food, and our increased sales volumes will be expected to increase as the business unit grows. Our packaged foods business within this segment is also performing well, as retail customers are buying canned and packaged pulses and pasta and other packaged foods from AGT. As a management team, we're focused on this business unit as it provides support for the segment overall and allows AGT to leverage its strengths in origination of raw materials, processing, and packaging, taking products from producers and delivering them straight to consumers' cupboards around the world. The segment overall accounted for, as Lori mentioned, 21.5% of AGT's total tons invoiced in the quarter, compared to 14% the quarter before, demonstrating the opportunity that we feel this segment has for AGT as we diversify to higher margin, value-added products and transform our company from a focus of being a commodity shipper of pulses and grains to a balanced commodity company, food company, and retail packaged food and ingredient supplier. In conclusion, before we go to questions, I want to summarize that our management strategy and focus is clear to our stakeholders and shareholders. We're building a significant global food and ingredient company that is well diversified and creating market opportunities as well as consistent earnings. We believe our current results demonstrate that we're continuing to build from our strengths, particularly our facilities, origination, logistics and processing strengths, our global merchandising and management ability, and our diversified product offering in all segments of our business. These are major components that make AGT strong in all markets we're in, and we're creating opportunities through our key investments in all our segments. We'll continue with these strategies to continue to increase shareholder value and expand our business overall. I thank you for your interest in AGT Foods, and I'll hand it back to Omar for a question and answer.
Thanks, Murad. Operator, I think we'll go to the first question, please.
We will now begin the question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question, please press star and 1 on your touch tone phone. You will hear a tone to indicate you are in queue. For participants using a speakerphone, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing any keys. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and 2. There will be a brief moment while we poll for questions. The first question is from Jacob Bout of CIBC. Please go ahead.
Good morning. My first question is just on the uptick that we're seeing on the EBITDA per ton and the food ingredients and the packaged food. If you can put it into buckets, how much is this from the increase in capacity utilization, how much is from the inclusion of the higher margin feed and food ingredients. And then I also had a follow-up question on the deflavoring line.
Okay, just to address the first one, Jacob, I think that certainly the growth in the tonnage in the segment, reflects largely increased utilization from the third processing line. So, we really started to commission that late in the first quarter. And, with a plan of attempting to ramp it up in around, 5 to 6 months, when you go into commercial production with about 35,000 tons of annual volume from that third line, you end up in a position where you've got about, say, 8,750 tons of utilization per quarter. Our tonnage has actually increased, by about 15,000 tons. So you can see that actually line 3 was running at, pretty good utilization even in the first commercial, period. So we do have a contribution of it, in terms of that ramp up of capacity utilization. I think we're probably running around 60% utilization on that segment even in the first quarter. So I think that's very positive. We're also seeing the uptick on our starch values. So, as you start to move that starch fraction from the true feed sector, so, we're talking about selling that starch into, literally chicken feed markets, other animal feed markets, that is truly the lowest, use of the food feed ingredient. As we start to tick into pet food and human food applications, we're starting to see a material lift on that starch fraction. So that's improving as well. In addition, we said this is a very high fixed cost component business. So we're starting to see the evidence of the operating leverage. As you start to boost utilization in line 3, we add the deflavoring, we add line 4, line 5 in the future, you're going to start to see very significant contribution to net earnings. We are not replicating. We're adding scientists. We're not adding in a complete R&D center. We're adding marketing people, not an entire sales and marketing program. We're not adding a whole new food safety program. We're just ramping it up. And I think that that's, part of what you're going to see as a benefit. So, that's the food ingredient side. On the packaged food side, the Arbella's pasta segment, we did announce that we're continuing our expansions in that particular area in the capital budget that we allocated. They continue to show strong margins. And, part of that has been market concentration. We say proudly we're distributing Arbella in 91 countries, but I can tell you there's probably 15 countries in which we're making, better margins, and those 15 countries continue to be a strong focus.
And then on the deflavoring?
What's the question on the deflavoring?
Sorry, I wasn't sure if I was still live. So the question on the deflavoring is, how much of this product are you planning on running through the deflavoring line? What products? And then is this deflavoring part of the umbrella with Ingredion?
The deflavoring is definitely under the umbrella with Ingredion on the food sector side. And it is a very important initiative. The food company's feedback on the, industrial trial quantities, Jacob, we haven't been sending 1 kilogram samples. We produced, I think, 10,000 pounds of product in industrial trials. I think we're now on our second or third industrial trial done and distributed. So, the food companies are also using our construction cycle in their product development cycle. It is targeted to be around 50,000 tons of capacity in that deflavoring line. It'll be targeted at our protein fraction, the starch fraction, and then also both flours, but the sterilization side of it will be largely utilized for the pulse fiber fraction. The fiber fraction, when we purify it in a re-cleaning process, we get to an 85% fiber, and the microbiological activity of a pulse crop, because it's exposed to the natural elements of the field, whether it be you know, grasshopper parts or, you know, other types of naturally occurring, you know, field production elements, you need a microbiological kill step. And that sterilization process that we'll be utilizing in that deflavoring will be used for the fiber as well. So there's going to be, I have a view that about half of our current production in the three lines will go into that deflavoring, which will likely warrant us to need to build line four or five, or four and five, hopefully, in 2016, 2017.
Thank you, Mark.
The next question is from Peter Pratas of Alta Corp Capital. Please go ahead.
Yes, Peter.
Good morning, everyone.
Morning.
My questions here are surrounding the ingredients group. I'm just wondering if you can provide some color on how many food companies are using your product, and are you fairly concentrated here at the onset until you have more capacity to service an expanded customer list?
I couldn't give you the exact number, but I would say it would number in the range of around 40 to 50 North American and 20 or 30 European companies are currently in the product testing pipeline. We would have a number of the large international majors that are currently involved in testing. So, you know, if you look at the Pulse product launches, I think it's 2014, we had around 3,600 product launches in North America that were including Pulse ingredients. So that activity has been, going up, in terms of going off the charts in terms of the number of launches. So, you know, when you look at the profile, let's be honest, the utilization of this in the pipelines of product development is not only because they're pulses. It's really because it's high protein, high fiber, non-GMO, gluten-free, with a high micronutrient profile, and it's clean label. So, you know, that is it. So every food company, if you look at it, I don't know of any major food company or retailer on their private label that is not focusing on one, two, or even three of those six or seven elements that I mentioned. So, you know, that's our target. And, the feedback has been quite positive.
Great. And just on the human food ingredient side, I mean, is it really in once the fourth and fifth line potentially get added that you start to service that market, or will it occur, I guess, more meaningfully sooner than that with the addition of the deflavoring and sterilization lines?
Well, it'll happen meaningfully with the deflavoring line because there's a portion of production right now, you know, in particular when I look at the starch fraction that is going into the animal feed sector, and there's a number of applications that will utilize that. Like we call it starch, but it's a pulse flour. It's still 13% protein. It's around 70% starch, and it's a natural product. So the deflavoring will allow that to be utilized in things like bakery products, extruded snacks, so crunchy snacks, crackers, all of those types of applications. And we're expecting that production, even from line three and the deflavoring line, of course, is going to largely be targeted at the food companies. Now, in addition, interestingly, the pulse ingredient inclusion in pet food is getting to a level where there are some companies who are also interested in the deflavored ingredients, because as you start to increase inclusion in meat-free or in grain-free and corn-free blends, you know, they want to ensure that the palatability of all the product, they don't have any type of detectable taste of a number of these ingredients. So, you know, we still think that could be an opportunity.
The next question is from Steve Hansen of Raymond James. Please go ahead.
Oh, yeah. Good morning, guys. Red, can you elaborate perhaps a little more on the evolving supply chain strategy that you're speaking to? By your comments, it does sound like the WCR acquisition is only a piece of a broader rollout plan of your capabilities. And I'm just sort of curious as to what type of assets you might be pursuing, whether they be port terminals or what have you, and whether they might be entirely domestic focused or international.
Well, I think that, good question, Steve. Certainly, our ability to take our farmer origination platform, into, value-added, bagging, containerized shipping, we want to return our state-of-the-art processing plants back into that business. When utilizations were down at very low levels with the global financial crisis and, significant quality, issues in the crops in 2010 and 2011, we took every opportunity we could to utilize assets. Well, as the markets have continued to turn around, these bulk shipping opportunities and an opportunity to ship into our own, production system. Turkey is a very big part of that logistics strategy where, we're at a point now with the seventh pasta line being added and the largest Bulgur wheat mill in the world, that we are a very significant user of durum wheat. And so durum wheat is a focus that we did not have prior. So part of the rationale in expanding into West Central Road and Rail was the addition of bulk rail loading capacity. Now, that bulk rail loading capacity is going to need further, infrastructure that could be utilized for shipping. So we're either going to put it in bulk containers, which we'll continue to do, and we'll also be looking at, various opportunities for partnerships, service agreements, and maybe even the potential of strategic investments in port facilities and those types of things to facilitate the growing volume in our business. Now, as you are aware, we are already shipping via a number of terminals in Thunder Bay on the bulk side, and of course, we are one of the largest container shippers in this country. So, we'll be looking at the domestic focus. I want to be clear, this is not this is an enabling strategy. It's not the driving strategy of the business. The driving strategy of the business is, more solid earnings in terms of utilization of our assets and capturing those market windows that exist. In addition, it may be that, these logistics investments domestically will help us to leverage investments we've already made elsewhere. Like we made an investment in a 180,000 square foot distribution facility in Tianjin, China. So that is already done. We built that in 2012, 2013. So, those types of warehousing and distribution systems, AGT India has been launched. We're active on the distribution locally. So we'll be looking at opportunities to solidify our supply chain there.
Okay, no, that's great. And just one quick follow-up, if I may, is just on a shorter-term basis, can you just perhaps speak to the current status of the stock there, the inventories available relative to last year at this time, and just the relative timing of the harvest as well, I guess, as we sort of contemplate Q3 here with, relatively low inventories heading in?
I got to tell you, carryout stocks this year are negligible. So I think one of the positives that we're seeing right now is, of course, by the way, harvest quantities have started to arrive. So this is definitely, when you compare to last year and the year prior, in September to mid-September to late September, we'd barely received any quantities yet as a result of the very late planting and the very late harvest. And so, the current old crop stocks, what was available is now being delivered. So, these drought worries certainly curbed deliveries in late May and June. I mean, here, the national media was talking about a crop failure in Western Canada, in particular in Saskatchewan. I can tell you unequivocally, this is not a crop failure. We're going to have in pulse as an average to potentially slightly above average yield. And I think that one of the things, Steve, that people have to recognize that an average is over a number of years. The last 2 years were not average harvests. They were actually bumper crops. So we forecast our available supplies based as an average yield. And from that perspective, I don't think we're going to be disappointed. So stocks that are available are coming to market. There's nearly nothing left. We're projecting to have ample supply to meet last year's export pace, which was a very, I think we were record export again last year. And we expect that we'll have a small carryout next year again to help us to transition so we won't be potentially so tight in June and July next year.
The next question is from Mark Robinson of Cormark Securities. Please go ahead.
Thanks. So just a little bit to follow on the last question. So, I mean, the issue here with volumes down 100,000 tons or so is looks like to be, you know, solely a supply issue. So can you just comment on what the demand situation looks like, be it, you know, now and through the back half of the year?
I can tell you that we're expecting that, you know, India is, of course, a driver in terms of the demand picture. And, you know, monsoon rains have continued to be in deficit for next year's crop, or for this October and for next March. As a result of that, last year India had a record export, record import of Canadian lentils. We're expecting the potential that they'll exceed that this year again. So we'll set a new record. Turkey and the Middle East region, Turkey had an average crop at best. And, you know, with such a large asset base there, you'd think that would could potentially be negative for AGT. Actually, we prefer an average crop there. It means we have good local supplies to utilize when we need them, but we import and we distribute. That's the strength of AGT's infrastructure in Turkey. So we're expecting a very strong demand from the United Nations programs for Syria, Iraq. We see continued strong demand in North Africa from Egypt, Sudan, and the Middle East market in general. Interestingly, we are expecting that the deal on the nuclear situation with Iran is going to have a positive demand impact on Canadian pulses. Iran is a major market for Canadian green lentils. In fact, it's emerged as, from year to year, it can become the largest green lentil market in the world. And the easing of restrictions, the free flow of currency, and the utilization of the Emirates as a transshipment point, and also direct shipments being able to resume to Iran at some point in the future, you know, we view as a very strong opportunity for us. So, Mark, you know, again, I use the word strong a lot. We're expecting to have, you know, quite robust demand over the course of the year, good supplies available, and we have more capacity this year. So as a result of that, you know, we're projecting it to be, you know, a potentially positive, you know, end of quarter three, and of course, quarter four, quarter one will be solid periods for us.
Okay, great. And then just shifting here to food ingredients, just so I'm clear, did you say that the utilization on line three was at 60% in the quarter?
Yeah, it's running about 60%, so it's doing quite well. It's actually ramping up, you know, probably a little bit quicker than our expectation. And, you know, part of that is just, I think the strategy is right. I mean, we're building demand. We're building an urgency for demand. So when we put new lines into production, we're able to utilize them quickly. I mean, you know, I think the one thing that people have to recognize is 35,000 tons of ingredients per line. That's not a small undertaking. Companies work years to sell 35,000 tons of ingredients. We're launching a line and selling it out in 6 or 8 months. So, yeah, I was quite happy with the utilization in the first period here.
Okay, and then just final here, has there been any change in the preferred pulse feedstock within the food ingredients business as a result of the testing work that's been done by Ingredion and by their customers?
Yeah, you're going to have to clarify the question, Mark. I didn't quite understand it.
So, I mean, I think originally the pea was used as the feedstock, and so has there been any change in what customers are using as the feedstock or the preferred feedstock?
Yeah, listen, peas, of course, are the cheapest pulse. And so as a result of that, a lot of the initial work by, you know, the isolate companies, guys that are doing, you know, chemical solvent, you know, isolate as extraction, so not natural ingredients like ours, you know, they've been focused a lot on the pea, largely because, you know, some of these companies were in Europe and they were using French peas. The issue with peas is they do have a natural, you know, kind of a bitter flavor to them. And so, you know, we immediately had started targeting lentils, faba beans, and chickpeas. And I can tell you that those three products are all having very, you know, significant uptake. The faba bean in particular has a very neutral flavor, quite a pleasant flavor even from a start. It's a higher protein than a pea or a lentil from a start. And AGT happens to have a proprietary variety that was developed by the University of Saskatchewan by Dr. Bert Vandenberg, and we're commercializing that variety on an exclusive basis in Western Canada. So it's been a very positive part of the ingredient platform. We're expecting great things out of those three crops.
The next question is from Keith Carpenter of Canaccord. Please go ahead.
Good morning. I'll have a question. I have a question that has been posed by some investors, so I'll just ask it this way. On your ramp up of the food ingredients, and this expands on what you just said to Mark's question as well, can you speak to lines 4, 5, and 6 at Minot, more specific timelines associated with those lines, and can you speak to why you aren't building those expansions faster to have them ready if you believe the growth will be there and they're needed? Meaning, once line 3 is fully ramped, let's just assume that line 3 is fully ramped by the end of this year, would you not rather have line 4 already built and ready to go in January? I'll just leave it there.
Yeah, I think one of the key things to recognize, Keith, is that in the expansion of the deflavoring line, we are building all of the associated infrastructure that will be able to house line 4, 5, and 6. And so from that perspective, that's the lead time. Okay, so there's nothing that won't be in our control to order a line 4 if needed later in 2015 and have it commissioned in the earlier part of 2016. So just to recognize that the lead times become like the lead time on line 1 to line 2 to line 3, which is around, you know, there's around a 6-month lead time to order and to receive all of the equipment. So with that, you know, you're in a position where when the building's built and all the associated infrastructure is built, it's what I call a plug-and-play manufacturing system. Plug it in, connect it, and play. And so the time to ramp will be able to be shortened. We're keeping our eye on the sales program. I mentioned earlier, you know, a little bit of shortage of availability creates demand urgency from the food companies. We want to ensure that we maintain that pace. And we're building a whole new business here. It's a small little piece, but it's transforming a little segment of the food industry's ingredient profile. We want to make sure that we're targeting the right applications. We're having good success and good traction with the large food co's because success breeds additional opportunities with the same companies. So when you're dealing with the, you know, General Mills, Post, Kellogg's, Nestle's, Unilever's, you know, those types of companies, Maple Leaf Foods, those types of companies, you don't go with a single pursuit. You go with one or two or three really strong pursuits that can lead to 4, 5, or 6 other pursuits. So we want to make sure we do it right.
Do you guys see, when you look at line 4, is it your view that you wouldn't be surprised if that is up and running and producing in Q3 of 2016? And then followed by line 5 shortly thereafter?
Yeah, I can't comment on the exact timing, but I can tell you that you know, when we built, and we've even said in our disclosures, you know, we are planning expansions to line 4s and line 5s in 2016, 2017. So, you know, watch out for us to continue to update you along next quarter. And we're certainly not going to sit there with full capacity and not moving. We don't have a capital constraint. We don't have an infrastructure constraint. And we're creating the markets. So you can be sure we're going to be reacting as quickly as needed.
The next question is from Stephen Otterich of BMO Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Hey, good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Lines 4, 5, and 6 are being built in Minot as well?
Right now, the physical space is being built there. We've made the decision to consolidate all of our operations on the pulse food ingredient milling side there as a result of the food safety programs, the production systems, and everything else. Stephen, we'd have to replicate a lot of infrastructure to move to another plant location. We will be looking, though, at, you know, as the European opportunities ramp up, we'll be looking at whether or not Turkey is the right spot for a production system for servicing Europe, or whether or not there's somewhere right in another country within Europe. But Turkey, of course, could make a lot of sense for us on an expansion at some point in the future. With Turkey, we don't have to build all the physical infrastructure. We have buildings, we have splitting lines, dehulling lines, so we have a lot of the associated ancillary infrastructure, storage, handling, that can just basically, we could plug and play in Turkey as well if needed. But at this point, Stephen, we expect that Minot is going to continue a ramp up because the North American opportunity is playing out quite nicely.
Yeah. This International Year of the Pulse, is it going to be costing AGT money to contribute to it?
We've made an announcement, or the industry made an announcement, that the Government of Canada, under the Western Diversification Program, approved a $3.5 million grant for the International Year of Pulse, and AGT made a $600,000 commitment over 3 years total, so it's around $200,000 a year. That we will be, we're the largest industry contributor to that program, and we'll be targeting our money at the brand awareness campaign and the, we'll be driving the social media campaign, Stephen, utilizing social media to build awareness on pulses.
The next question is from Greg Coleman of National Bank Financial. Please go ahead.
Hi, Murad. Just a quick one here. Wanted to come back to the crop that we're seeing coming out this year. Very good comments, and I appreciate your clarity on the size relative to the average versus last year, which were bumper crops. But I'm wondering if we can talk about quality for a little bit. In your opening statements, you said that the early samples indicate that quality is good. Yields are looking not too bad either. But I would like you to talk to us a little bit about, is there a risk from this point on until you see it coming in of the replication of the poor quality crops that we saw in 2010 and 2011, or are we at a stage in the growth here where that risk is largely behind us and it's pretty much in the bag that it's going to be a high-quality crop?
Well, listen, the only thing I can't do, and, you know, I'll ask the powers that be for that power to predict the weather, but today I can tell you that the crop advancement, we're in the advanced stages. And, you know, if you look back at the 2010 crop issue, it was literally a rain of five decades. So this is not a normal event. I think we received nearly an annual rainfall of moisture in 21 days at harvest. So we have not, we have to go back, you know, decades and decades to find another incident like that. My assessment today is that normal weather occurrences, whether it be thunderstorms, you know, those types of things, should not have a material effect on crop quality. So, in fact, Greg, we were last week, 80 millimeters of rain fell in Saskatchewan over the course of around 36 hours, and we can tell you that we don't feel there was a material effect on the crop. So we're looking in pretty good shape, and you know what? Today, 34 degrees Celsius in Regina, and I tell you, harvest starts to move pretty quickly when it's so hot. So it's great weather for harvest today.
That is exactly the color I was looking for. If we could just dive in a little bit further on the other side of it, so that's the part which you have no control on, but it sounds like things are looking pretty good absent some ridiculous 50-plus year event. But talking about the parts you can control, we know that your sourcing has diversified from a corporate perspective today versus 2010, getting more inputs from elsewhere in the world and not, you know, solely reliable or heavily reliable on Canada as you were in the past. What other changes structurally have taken internally on that core pulse processing division, which, you know, if you do see a drop-off in quality, would mitigate the impact on the margins just in the event that that does happen?
Just to be very clear, we actually like to have some quality variance. So a perfect quality crop is also never the best case scenario for AGT because we've invested heavily, Greg, in value-added processing technologies, peeling, splitting, color sorting, so optical color sorting. We'd be the largest utilizer of that technology in the pulse world, you know, in terms of a company. So, you know, what we're expecting this year that we are just going to see what I would consider to be a normal, you know, distribution of grades. So, you know, what I would say in the lentil side, a normal distribution of grades would be somewhere in the range of around, on red lentils, you would see around 80% of the crop in a number two or better quality. And we're expecting that to be the case this year. The areas that are affected on an extra three or a three are likely to be at the high end of the low grade, if that makes sense. On the green lentil side, we're expecting, you know, a distribution of around, say, 15% or so, 20% to be in the number one grade, a big chunk to be in that number two grade, and then around, say, 15 to 20% maximum in the lower grades. I think that, you know, one of the things we've done to ensure that we can meet, you know, a variable quality crop that we have better capability in is we have more color sorting and we just have more capacity in general. Part of what happened, Greg, in 2010 was because we had to run the product two and three times to achieve the outcome that we needed to market the product, utilization went way down as well. And so I think that, you know, one of the things is like West Central Road and Rail acquisition. Our bulk shipping program will go through our bulk system now. Our processing plants are available to deal with value-added processing as needed, and we'll actually create margin as a result of that. I think that's a big difference of this company today versus where we were earlier. I feel pretty resilient in terms of our ability to deal with quality variance in a normal circumstance when it comes.
The next question is from Anup Prahar of GMP Securities. Please go ahead.
A couple of questions, please. First of all, what was system-wide utilization in Q2?
Anup, it was running around about 74% in the pulse and grain segments.
Okay.
The pasta utilization, again, would be at around 97-98%. And as I said, on the food ingredient side, utilization on that third line was around 60%. So we were actually running at quite good utilization.
So 74 was system-wide then, is that correct?
Sorry, what was that?
74% was a system-wide number?
That's right.
Okay. And then second of all,
from around 87% the quarter before. So, you know, I think that one of the, you know, one of the top-line stories in this is, you know, again, the diversification of our product mix within the legacy business and, of course, the addition of the food ingredients. You know, here we are with nearly 100,000 tons less handle in the quarter as a result of a temporary supply disruption, and yet earnings were flat quarter over quarter. I think that's a really good news story for us.
And secondly, on the production you had out of all three lines on the ingredient side, what's roughly the volume split between what goes to human food and what goes to pet food?
Would probably be around 70%, 70 to 75% into the pet food side, maybe 25% into the food side today.
Okay.
And we expect, of course, with the deflavoring line addition, we want that to go to, you know, a mix of, we hope, around 50-50 by the end of 2016 to early 2017. So you're going to see quite a, we believe the deflavoring line, Anup, will have a material impact on food company adoption and inclusion rates.
And that's just my last question. Can you just remind us, please, what's the timeline for the deflavoring and the sterilization lines coming on?
Construction completion of the building is scheduled for end of November. Installation will begin in December, January. We should be into testing and production later in the quarter and quarter one. So you'll have it producing some quantity in quarter one, and then by quarter two, we should have it into commercial production. Now, the ramp-up of this one will be, you know, just the sales program will ramp it up. We won't have a – we're not anticipating a technology, you know, ramp-up issue. It's quite a proven system, and we've now, as I said, run three large industrial trials, and so we're very confident in our ability to integrate this quickly.
Thank you.
The next question is from Steve Hansen of Raymond James. Please go ahead.
Yes, Steve.
Steve, are you there? I guess Steve is gone, so there are no more questions at this time. I would like to turn the call
Thank
back
you,
over
operator.
To Omar Khatib.
Thank you, operator. That brings us to the end of our questions in the session today. I'd like to thank you all for joining us. And I'd like to remind for those still on the call that if you do have any follow-up questions, you can feel free to contact us at our Regina head office, and we'd be more than happy to follow up with you. So, again, thank you for attending our conference call, and we wish you all a very good day.
This concludes today's conference call. You may now disconnect your lines. Thank you for participating, and have a pleasant day.